You are now tuning in to the Own the Build podcast. Join C-Link's very own Paul Hemming, where each week he interviews experts from the world of construction and asks all the important questions around intelligent construction management.
Hello and welcome to episode 56 of Own the Build with me, Paul Hemming. Today's episode is titled The Professional Relationship Between Architects, Boo, and QSs. Come on. So we're joined by Javad Khalil, who is the founder and MD at Consult North. They're an independent construction consultancy operating across the north of England. Welcome to the show, Javad.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
How you doing?
Yeah, all right. Thanks. How are you?
Very good. You know, for keen listeners to this show, they will know that I'm a big fan of accents. And they will know that we've had some absolutely sensational accents on the show before. But this is definitely the first. Is Geordie accent the right accent? Is that how you...
That's correct.
Or would you prefer a northeast accent?
It's generally Geordie. In the wider northeast, there is other accents. So Geordie would be the accurate description, yeah.
Are you a Geordie?
I am, yes. Born and bred.
Excellent. Well, I have to say, I am a big fan of the Geordie accent. I think it's a good one. So I'll have to check with our producer, Umar, after the show to see just where you rank. So I'm sure he's got some kind of system going on in terms of accents. But I'm a big, big fan. So... it's great to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you. For everyone who is listening, who doesn't know who you are, introduce yourself, talk about you and your experience to date.
My name is Javad Khalil, as you've introduced me kindly. The founder and managing director of Consult North. We're an independent construction consultancy based in the north of England, specialising in project management and cost management. Little bit about myself, went to university here in the northeast, did a little spell in London.
Just saw those accents are bang average, I'm heading back home.
Home is home, yeah. Home is where the heart is. So back to the northeast after about 2 years. Worked for some large practices and equally smaller practices before taking the plunge and starting Consult North at the beginning of the first lockdown.
Amazing. And Consult North, you're a QS, right?
That's correct, yeah. QS. I'm on now, your team.
Yeah, well, brilliant. And we're going to bully the other side today.
Exactly.
Are we?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who knows? So there's one key aspect of your background and your experience that you didn't actually say there. And I think you're a very modest young man, aren't you? Because one of the reasons I was drawn towards speaking with you, Javad, was that I saw you were rewarded RICS's Young Surveyor of the Year 2021. I see you squirming in your chair now at even me mentioning that accolade, but it's pretty impressive. Tell me about it.
Yeah, the RICS Young Surveyor of the Year Award.
That is some going. I mean, I've been a surveyor for quite some time and never even got a mention of it.
No, got a mention. It was an honour, to say the least, going down to London on the train, wondering if, obviously knew at that point that I'd been shortlisted, but didn't know who had won the award. The category was quite packed. I think there was about 10 or 11 nominees for the category. Managed to pick up the win on the night, which was phenomenal. Great night in London. But yeah, it's great to be recognised for not only the work that I've done for myself and the company, but also paving the way for the younger generation. And that's something that I'm really passionate about.
Amazing. And this might be an uncomfortable question to ask, but what was it that they saw in you and what you had done in 2021 that landed you the award?
So you're ranked against a number of criteria. You either get nominated for the award, which I did, or you put forward a submission yourself, which equally you can do. You're ranked against a number of criteria, in which judges who specialise in the industry will judge the award based on what the RICS's values are and what they are looking for. I think it generally goes a long way in terms of showing what you have done for the industry, how you've been innovative, how you are helping the younger generation or the surveying industry be a better place. So I think they are the key drivers.
I think I might just ask some people to start nominating me. Why not? If it's that simple, you know, put me forward. Why can't you do it for 2022, eh?
Exactly, Paul. We'll get you in there. Yeah, you do have to be under 35, so I don't know.
Oh, I am actually. So just. Thanks for pointing that one out.
35 this year.
Just turned 33, actually, so I've still got 2 years. So 2022 could be my year. Everyone get nominated. Throw my nomination in. I'm up for it. So
yeah, that's it.
Let's talk about construction then. What was it that made you join the construction industry? Why did you want to join in?
That's quite an easy question for me, Paul. The way I describe my attraction to the construction industry is the journey or progress. I mean, as a young kid, I was always interested in driving past sites at the back of my mum and dad's car and looking at the progress every time you passed that site when you were on a journey. I found that fascinating, and to see something built at the end of it, obviously, is the plus, and how the end user or tenant of that property utilises it. And to think that that's all come from a vision in a client's head one day. So now I love being part of that process, but going back to your question there, it's definitely the journey for me. I think construction is one of the few industries that you get to see that journey represented in such a physical format. And that's one thing that...
All the joys and sorrows, exactly. Effectively. You have the real tangible end product. I completely agree with that. That's one of the reasons I enjoy it, is that you can drive into different parts of the country or world, if you're lucky enough, and say, oh, I was involved in that project, or I was involved in that project. And it's a real takeaway, isn't it? I completely agree with that. And what we want to talk about today, a topic that we've skirted around the issue somewhat in the last 50 or so episodes, which is the relationship between quantity surveyors and architects. I've had lots of architects on the show, had lots of QSs on the show, and there's always a running joke in the industry, isn't there, about QSs and architects being on opposite sides, not working on the same team. I kind of alluded to it at the start, didn't I, by booing the architect and celebrating the QSs, because that's the side I'm on. Now, it's all a bit of a joke, but you actually wrote your dissertation when you were at uni about the relationship between quantity surveyors and architects. Why did you do that?
That's correct. I did indeed write my dissertation on the professional working relationship between QSs and architects. Within my early days at university, there was kind of an underlying tone from certain lecturers. I won't say all lecturers, but certain lecturers that would portray if there were a QS lecturer, they would portray the other profession, i.e. the architect, in quite a negative manner, which was kind of prior to stepping into university. I didn't come from a construction background. I never did any work experience as a trade, never worked for a consultancy.
So you literally learned that they were the visible enemy to some degree.
Correct, to some degree. And I'm a quite curious individual, so it kind of did sit right with me just to start with. I was like, well, why is that? I think I need to explore that a little bit more. And obviously, when you're at university, you do your first 2 years, and then you go off and do your year out placement, which is in industry.
And did you meet any architects? I hope you didn't. I hope you avoided them.
It kind of just solidified the view that QS has had of architects. So that just seemed to add fuel to the fire. And I kind of didn't still have my answer to some extent.
What do you mean it solidified the view?
Well, because QSs would, in industry, portray the architect as being an individual that wasn't pleasant to work with.
I see what you're saying. So it was the same echo as from the lecturers.
Exactly. So there was a link there between what my lecturers were saying and what was happening in industry.
So it's a thing in theory and in the field.
Correct. And the reason for the research, when it came back to finishing my year out, back to university into final year, which you all know is when you do your dissertation, when I was looking for a topic, everyone was sort of banging the drums of BIM at the time and things like and modern methods of construction, which probably still is ongoing now and more prevalent than ever. And I thought, I'm going to do something a little unconventional here. And I thought, well, why not look into this relationship that QSs have with architects and what is actually going on there? What's the dynamic, or why is it creating such a such different feelings between the individuals, and I thought that was a good topic at the time to research.
And when you set out, what were you expecting to find?
Well, I was expecting it to be a reflection of my experience, which was a bit naive. Obviously, one person's experience doesn't set the underlying tone for what everyone's experience is going to be. I think that's the most important thing to demonstrate. But it was just interesting to see the views of others. And I think that's the biggest thing that came out of doing the research, was how others felt and whether they had the same experience as I had.
Mm-hmm. And so were you interviewing both QSs and architects?
That's correct. So when I eventually did my questionnaire to clear the research, that went out to both quantity surveyors and architects.
And do we like each other?
See, the thing is, we do. And I think I'll come on to the points in terms of why there's the friction there, or what was cited to be the most common issue. And I think when you look at those common issues, you would expect there to be some friction there. I think, like, if we strip it back to basics rather than talking a little bit cryptic here in terms of research purposes, a QS can't do their job without an architect. I think everyone will sort of testify to that.
Definitely I could, yeah.
So having said that, the QS and architect relationship is almost a pinch point. And you look at the factors of what could cause that relationship in being a pinch point and causing friction. And I'll give you a flavour of the highest ranked issues between QSs and architects that were cited in the research. The first one...
Can I guess?
Go on. There's three. I'm going to go through three. So if you guess...
All right. I would guess, if I was the architect, that the number one would be QS is constantly trying to ruin my design and use cheap products. That's what I always had thrown at me, and I completely disagreed with that. But would that be number one? Would that be in there at least?
It wasn't in there, but you're looking at that from solely a QS perspective. So you've got to remember, yeah, there's two audiences here that are going to be answering. And the first issue, despite it being answered by both professions, was late or incomplete information.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, no, take the QS and the architect out of that situation. If that was any other profession, there would still be a friction.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I think the key thing here is to not stigmatise the QS and architect, but look at the reasons why there is a friction. It's not because one is in charge of cost and one is in charge of design. It could be something as simple as there's late and incomplete information. And as part of the research, that was the number one cited issue between QSs and architects.
And two and three? I can't believe mine's not in there. I'm upset now.
Three's kind of linked, but two was lack of coordination. That was number two.
That would be a QS's frustration with the architect not leading the coordination of the design.
That's correct. So obviously architect generally, in general speaking terms, they are the lead designer on projects. So they're responsible for coordinating all the information, whether that be from the interior designer, the structural engineer, the mechanical engineer, just making sure that design comes together and it all works. So lack of coordination was cited as the second highest issue that QSs and architects had. And the third was design inadequacies. Design inadequacies, you could say that kind of relates to what you're saying, i.e. budget being one and the design saying something else.
Because you're kind of pushing, you're pulling away from one another. As an architect, you want to protect this concept that you have and you want to deliver as beautiful a project as possible, which, in my experience, so does the QS. If we go back to what you said at the very start about, I want that tangible thing that I go into another city and say, I did that job and it's beautiful and it's great. We want the same things as well, right? It's just we have a separate restriction that we're measured on whether or not the job is profitable or otherwise, right? So that's our challenge. But it's not that we don't want a good project. We do.
Exactly. And, I mean, with what you've just said there, I'll come on to the number one cited mitigation measure was cited to be collaborative working. So what you said there is a direct reflection of what the industry thinks should happen to mitigate these issues that we have got. They think that collaborative working is the number one method to get rid of all the issues that QSs and architects have together.
That feels a bit too broad for me, collaborative working. What were they really saying?
What they were really saying there was you're all working for the same client, i.e. you should be working towards the same goal. So where we are seeing it as part of this conversation, the design is here and the budget is here. That shouldn't generally be the case. Your design should be a direct reflection of your budget. And likewise, if you're working for the same client, they've only got one pot of money to spend and one building to build generally. So those two should work hand in hand. And the only way to do that is if you work collaboratively. You can't have one person designing the Hilton and the other one pricing for a travel lodge, for example. And I think that's the easiest way to explain that.
Oh, I like that as a example. Usually people say like a Ferrari and a Mini, but a Hilton and a travel lodge, I like a lot. Really interesting. I'm really enjoying this. And I think what I would like to understand now or next is kind of how that has then shaped how you operate. But let's do that right after the break now, Javad. Hello, it's me again. I wanted to share a quick story with you on why I co-founded Sealink with my best mate, Chris. Chris and I, we're both QSs, and this is going to sound sad, but one night we were sat in the pub talking about subcontract tendering, and we realised the industry had a problem. Number one, procurement was too paper-based. Number two, it was too time-consuming, and every QS had their own unique way of doing things. And number three, perhaps most importantly, if you want to competitively tender, you need to know hundreds of the best subcontractors. We simply didn't. That's why we created Sealink. It's software to solve subcontract tendering. We wanted to remove these challenges and help the industry get better. So if you, or someone you know, tenders with subcontractors, you've got to see our software. Head over to our link, www.get.c-link.com/podcast to find out more. I will include it in the description box, so again, there's no excuses. Now, let's get right back to the show. So, what I'm interested in is, A, that you took this unique, you didn't go for BIM, you didn't go for modern methods of construction, you thought, I'm going to explore the psychology of someone who I'm going to be working alongside constantly. I want to explore that relationship and learn what the problems are with that relationship, and it will make me a better person in my career. Now, you've just won that award that is so incredible, and you're thinking about these relationships at the very early stage of your career. So it strikes me that part of that thinking that has shaped you into the person that you now are must be a very good thing. So tell me how your relationship is defined with architects now on projects that you work on.
Yeah, like I said earlier in the first half, I've always been inquisitive and wanting to find things out for myself. So I think my experience through university and in the early days of my career, that gave me a good understanding of what the general consensus is. And that was the sort of grounding of, right, what are the bugbears? What do I not need to do? And how do I need to act? And how do I get the best from this relationship, just as you would with any client or colleague or even in your personal life. And as I've said before, architects are key, very key to the success of a project. So I think as a QS, the best thing you can do is have them on site, especially undertaking project management roles and employees agent roles. You always need to have your architect on site so you can work collaboratively with them, as we've said previously.
But how do I get them on side? Because there's a stigma, isn't there, that we're not on the same side in the industry. How are you doing it so that you are on the same side?
I think the first thing is, Paul, don't put them on the back foot when you question them. And I'll give you an example of this. It's actually something an architect said to me. He said, generally, when we get a QS asking about why we've made such changes, it's very brash and it's very harsh. And it's, why have you done this? Client can't afford this. And I think the difference is when we're dealing with you, you kind of invite the answer rather than interrogating us. So you don't put us on the back foot for us to then scramble and give you an answer. It's more, an open dialogue conversation and understanding, right, instead of saying, why have you made this change? And the architect responding, try, these are the common aims for the project. And I see there's been a revised drawing that's been issued. Could you just talk me through the...
Oh, you're like a politician. Change here? Very diplomatic. Yeah.
And I think they will give you, they will be open-minded in their response, but they'd be willing to work with you as well. And I think they'd be less precious about just retaining what they've put in front of you if you were to just interrogate them. Because I often think that people just want to make a point sometimes. If the QS is interrogating the architect, they'll kind of be like, well, this is why we've done it, and they'll stand by it. Whereas if you give off the vibe that you're willing to work with them, you might be able to say, yeah, you can keep 60% of it, but 40% I'm going to have to unfortunately take back. And that's a compromise that they are still happy to take.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And that is midway through a project. There's an issue and it has to be resolved by both. Is there a tactic, if that's the right word, that you use at the outset of a project to build a relationship, to kind of like colour the relationship that you want to have with the architect at the start? Because surely that then prevents that very diplomatic question or that you're having at a later stage, is to try and build that relationship early. How do you optimise your relationship with the architect in that way?
There's a very early meeting that I normally have with the architect after they've been appointed on the project, and it'll be a general conversation around the scheme, what the client's budget looks like, what it is they're trying to achieve, what, in some instances, is the brand standard, the things that cannot be changed and need to be part of the project, and the packages or the design elements that may have the creative license. And it's just giving the architect enough space to spread their wings, but not completely ruin the project.
Yeah, that's a really... So if I'm understanding that correctly, and you're working largely on projects for developers, right, where you're QS for the developer, client architect is also the architect for the developer, and your goal is to deliver this development that they want, that the client wants, but within the budget. So are you, what you're saying is, you're at the very early stages saying, this is our budget, this is what we have to work with, I think there are opportunities in this package, the facade, let's say, to express yourself and for us to have a really good quality finish. That's what the brand wants for the development. But what I want to focus on with you, and I'll work with you on both, is the M&E or whatever, where you think those are the packages where I can compensate for this, so that you're completely understanding one another at the outset.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. So you give them a little bit of leverage in terms of the packages that they would really, really like to put their stamp on. But equally, you say, these are the areas which is, this is what needs to be done in those areas. So just be mindful that we've got work to do here, but you can go away and work your magic in these areas.
Is there any way, because obviously it's hard, isn't it? Because you might have a budget of 1 million, let's say, and you think, I think I'm going to spend 1 million, but I don't know. So do I want them to express themselves on the facade in my example, which is the early stage when I don't know where I'm going to be all the way moving through it budget-wise necessarily? How do you make sure that the architect feels like you're on their side, but at the same time retain control over your budget?
I think it's transparency, Paul. I think although the QS is the one that does the cost plan and the architect does their drawings, the architect always shares their drawings, but how often does the QS share the cost plan?
He said that, for all the listeners, he said that with such a wry little smile on his face.
But I think it's true, and again, it comes down to collaborative work, and it's helping the architect understand where the money is being spent. So, I mean, because how often do they look at figures? You will get the odd architect that will, but generally no one gets into the detail of it. And I think it's showing them that you've spec'd such an item and this is how much it costs. But if we reduce the specification for that, of something that equally looks nice and still performs its duties, we could use that money elsewhere to combat other issues we're facing on the project. And it's having that conversation. And I must say, 99% of the time, it's been quite successful.
I can imagine that it would be. And in those instances where it's been successful, to you, as a QS, you are trying to build this very collaborative, open-minded, objective-focused relationship with the architect. What advantages has it brought to you and your business having a better relationship with an architect?
There's a lot of benefit for the client, i.e. things get done a lot quicker because they know exactly what they're doing. You normally get things right first time round. You going into planning, knowing exactly what you've designed and roughly how much it's going to cost. And it's a feel-good vibe on the project, and I think the client understands that as well. So if you're a QS and also doing the employees agent role on the scheme, then the client sees your management of that team and says, yeah, he's doing a good job there because the team is happy working with him.
Yeah, the team is happy. The team wants to work together. The team is reporting back positive vibes, as you say. So the main advantage is you build a collaborative environment, a friendly environment where everyone is on side. Your client loves that. Your client says to you, I want you on the next job and the next job and the next job, and starts referring you. So it's good for business because it's good for the project.
Well, that's exactly it. You've built, once you've done a couple, you've built the blueprint to make any project successful. I think the flip side of it is you don't have the collaborative working approach. Everyone seems to be just doing anything that is easy and good for themselves. It takes longer for your client to achieve their objectives. Ultimately more time, because there's more time being spent on the project and they're not really getting what they want in an efficient manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's relatively simple stuff, this is actually, but just debunking, you know, even what I said about, I bet you they're just worried that I'm going to force a cheap product. It's just nonsense, isn't it, really, when you actually take a step back and think about it. And I can just see that the psychology of it is far more intricate than that, but we always joke about it being quite the opposite, right? You strike me as someone who is quite reflective on projects and looks back on past projects and thinks how you could do something differently. Thinking about the latest project you are working on, if you could turn back time and talk to yourself at the start of that project, is there anything you would tell yourself to do differently?
Be even more collaborative.
It's impossible. You're already so collaborative.
And it might not be, we might not be talking just about the design team here, but it's the integration of your end user and tenants, which I'm having to do currently on a project. And it's not just, we're not just talking one, we're talking seven different ones. Yeah. And I think it's getting the client to understand what they are providing, getting the design team to understand what they're providing, and helping the tenants understand what they're getting. And it's coordinating all those relationships through me as the one person. So I think it's probably coming up with a better solution to manage an influx in number of relationships on the same project.
I think, look, I've seen that, you know, you've got Javad Khalil, founder, MD at Consult North, RICS, award winner. I think we should also slap in there King of Collaboration, because it's honestly, I'm in admiration of your approach and what you're talking about. It's really great. I can see why you have been as successful as you have been at this early stage in your career. So kudos for that. We haven't got all the time in the world. I'd love to talk to you for much longer. But my final question, and this is a question that I usually ask people about their professions, if I don't know what it's like to be in their profession. Sadly for you, Javad, I am a QS, so I know what it's like being a QS. But what is the one common myth about being a QS that you want to debunk? What is not true?
Thinking about it, there's a couple of general ones, so I'll start with them, because a lot of what I do is centered around the younger generation and attracting people to the profession and construction industry as a whole. So I think the first one is that, so the general one would be that not all construction jobs are dirty. I think that's the big one, and I think as soon as someone mentions construction at all, JCBs and builders and rigger boots.
Yeah, yeah.
Murden. Do you know what I mean?
It's yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Exactly, exactly. So I think that's the first one. So that's for the guys, the guys and girls who are looking to get into construction and are wanting to learn more. There are other professional routes within the industry to pursue. One that really grinds on me, QSs are only there to count bricks. That's one that I've heard a number of times.
That is actually what my best mate told me when I was when I very first got into quantity surveying, right? Or actually, it was before that. I was looking for a job out of school, and there was one for a trainee quantity surveyor. I said to him, "What the hell's a quantity surveyor?" And he said, "Ah, you don't want to do that, mate. You're just going to be counting bricks all the time."
You still doing it though?
Yeah, I don't listen to him too much. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's the other one that generally others in the construction industry as a whole will say that to you if they're not a QS. So that's one that grinds on you. And I think the last one is quite general, but it's also for anyone that's young and ambitious. And I think it's being young doesn't make you any less capable.
Completely and utterly agree with that last sentence. And on that last sentence, I think we should end because it's absolutely correct. And as I said before, you're an absolute star. I really enjoyed having you on the show. It's been fascinating talking to you, and kudos for everything that you're doing. Keep doing it. I'm a big fan, Javad. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks very much, Paul. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And Geordies forever, Architects forever, QSs forever. Catch you next week, everyone. Cheers.